Okay, I'm talking today from the chapter in Ideas of Power called This Thing Called Life. The talk that is actually recorded in the book was given back in 1958, which is close to the end of Holmes's life. He traveled to Florida and spoke in Fort Lauderdale, St. Petersburg, Orlando, and Miami. Sounds like fun. So I brought a copy of This Thing Called Life. It's one of my favorites, but it was written much earlier in his life. So if you ever are looking for a good read from Holmes, that's enjoyable. So the question he seeks to answer at the beginning of the chapter is, what is life? And he says it's the thing we call God, which animates everything and makes everything what it is, and without which nothing would be. So when we call it life, it's kind of a neutral term, and it doesn't imply any kind of theology. So he told one of his cousins who was living in Florida that religion is our faith in God, and theology is the dogma that surrounds that faith, whatever it is. And religion or faith in God is something we're born with. We in some way, we instinctively know that there is some kind of a creative force in the universe. Whether we're an atheist or not, we are created. And, you know, if we're not aware of it, we have a tendency to slumber intellectually and emotionally and spiritually, kind of on a flat level. So I decided that the chapter really is about relationships, and I'm gonna cover that in a bit. It's both our relationship with ourself and our relationship with others, and it seems really relevant now. And I'm sorry, but I had a really irreverent thought as I was reading through this. It's kind of like talking about body odor on an energetic level.
Good.
So the thing we call life is the human personality. We can't see God, and we really can't see each other. I can see your physical form, but I don't really see you. And as a matter of fact, I really don't see myself, because I know that each of us is endlessly growing, evolving, and that we never get to the bottom of it. Even, you know, in one life, many lifetimes, we don't get there. And there's always more of ourselves to explore, which I find exciting. You know, the more I live, the more I realize, oh my God, I never stop growing inside. You know, I keep learning new things. I keep getting new insights. When I read books like this, I have new ahas, and I realize I've just grown some more. So Holmes said that each person is a center in consciousness, which is itself universal or cosmic. It's endless and forever expanding. And that's the experience I'm having now in my life, and I hope each of you is having as well. So our consciousness is limitless, and yet at the same time there are some spiritual masters such as Buddha or Jesus or Milarepa, who is my favorite, and they never reached their limit of self-knowledge in their lifetime. Milarepa, my favorite, is a Tibetan saint, and he spent years meditating in a cave and eating, I guess he boiled nettles or something like that. But there were a lot of people that learned from him. And when he died, the skies were filled with colors. It was as though the 4th of July had come to Tibet. So, and Holmes said also that Gandhi would sit within a large audience. There'd be tens of thousands of people, and very few could hear him. But though they couldn't hear his voice, it didn't matter, because when they were in his presence, they became enraptured. There was something about him and the level of self-awareness that he had reached that that affected others. And on a personal level, I had always wanted to see the Dalai Lama. So a few years ago, when he showed up at the mall, there was a big crowd. There was a big TV screen, so you could see him, even if you couldn't see the body and the platform. He was mic'd, And where I was sitting, I couldn't really see him in the flesh, but I could hear him, and I could feel that presence. And it was a magical moment for me, maybe because I had built it up in my mind, or maybe it was him as a human being. So this frequently happens between a speaker and an audience where they, you know, he's projecting their, he or she is projecting their energy, and the audience can feel it. But when you think about it, it's also true of concert musicians. When they get up and perform for an audience, they're projecting their energy, their consciousness is they're doing that, and they can join with the audience. And I could think, because I go hear operas fairly frequently, I think about how sometimes I'm sitting there and the place is totally quiet except for the performer. And at the end, people are yelling bravo and clapping wildly. And so there's been an exchange of energy that you feel. And so the consciousness of the speaker, the performer, and the audience, they meet and they flow back. Because without an audience, a performer is not going to be performing the same. So it's a mutual thing. So there's definitely some kind of transcendent spiritual awareness that's emanating from each of these spiritual masters, but also they depend on us as well. And each of us, Stephen, Bethany, I mean everybody in this room, we have that kind of spiritual awareness. And you can feel it in people. When you enter their presence, you can feel it. You can tell if you want to be around them or not. And it can be uplifting or it can be depressing. So, for instance, this is, if I didn't bathe or use deodorant for a week, you'd smell me coming, right? At an energetic level, the same thing happens. If I'm just in a negative place, you feel me coming. And as Emerson said, what you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying. Yes. So the combination of energies is like a resultant tone. Yes, a resultant tone is a psychoacoustic phenomenon where you're playing one note, but there are additional tones that are artificially perceived by the ear, although they don't truly exist. And so the discovery was credited to the violinist Giuseppe Tartini, who, and these are also known as Tartini tones. Tartini played the first Stradivarius violin, and he was also a music theorist. So I was wondering if maybe we could have an example of a resultant tone.
I'd be honored. Thank you for asking. I thought you'd never ask, but I'm sure I'll share with you. Well, good. I'll be happy to demonstrate. Let me first try with the flute. Now, for some reason, this may or may not work, but it will certainly work with the two penny whistles I had. They didn't cost a penny each. I don't want to tell you how many pennies. Anyway, this will work. Let me try this first. I'm going to play one note on the flute, one sound on the flute. And with my voice, I'm going to sing up and down, past. And if this works, you will hear, when my voice goes down, you will hear a Tartini tone come up. And when my voice goes up, you will hear a Tartini tone come down. So let me see if this works. If this is not so clear, it will work on the penny flutes. Let's see how it goes today. Getting it?
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me demonstrate it now with the two penny flutes. Now this is going to be a little bit shrill because they're high pitched. Now what I'm going to do, these are both in the same key, both two penny flutes, and I'm going to finger two notes on them that will be a whole tone apart. So on one flute, I'm going to play this one. On the other one. Now I'm going to play them both at the same time, and you'll hear, your mind will hear, a third tone that is under that. Hear that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How is this?
Awesome.
If you don't mind, I'll interject something also that
yes,
this
sir.
Occurs with light. That those of you who have been in the theater, you've been up on a stage when the lighting is subdued, and maybe one gel is on a light that is casting a shadow. Well, if there is a pretty clear color, the shadow will be the complementary color. So with an orange spot, the shadow will be perceived to be blue. Orange-blue complement. Mm-hmm. Or green-yellow as the shadow. So you have the Tartini tone effect with light also, where the opposite thing will happen in the shadow.
I didn't know that.
It's interesting.
Yes. And the reason, bringing it back to what I've been talking about, is that you put any two people together and you get a third entity. Right? I mean, couples often talk about, you know, the we. So there's the two people, and then there's the entity that's the we. So, because we're endless energetic beings, and often I don't have any idea how magnificent I am. And while I may think highly of everybody in this room, it probably doesn't even come close to how awesome they are from an energetic level. So about 15 years ago, we started this group in 2002. And although some of the members have moved to other parts of the country or they have moved on, you know, you think about the creation of that new entity, the light or the third tone, all of that has been moved on to other parts of the country. All of these people that came in here as part of this group and have moved on, they've been part of that we and they are out there. So I'm thinking about how powerful groups can be and how powerful we as individuals can be. And we have probably no clue how much influence we have on other people by that resultant tone. And thanks to David, our talks are now available through the website, and we may be a small group, but we're a very powerful group. And it's in this way that we can influence our environment, and we can draw from other people a feeling of love or connection. We can help to heal some of the loneliness in the world. Mm-hmm. And Holmes said that one of the greatest needs in the world is to heal the loneliness of the human mind. People feel very much alone and are unhappy and insecure. Yet if they were in touch with source energy, they would have more friends than they knew what to do with. If we love people, we will be loved. If we've healed ourselves of tremendous hurt, we will gather people towards us that desire to be healed. That is so true. And lately I've been playing with that at work. And what I do is, before I take a walk down the hall or something like that, I try to find one thing that I can appreciate. And of course, in my cubicle, you got to understand, at the top of the cubicle, I've got these lights, grape lights, at the top. And I've got an oriental rug. And I've got all kinds of colors and art in my cube. And so it's not hard to find something that I can appreciate. And what I'll do is I'll go down the hall and I'll be so happy, absolutely happy. And I look at other people in the eye as I walk past them. And not everybody's going to look at me, but I watch their face transformed because I know that the happiness I'm feeling inside as I look at them, that pulls up their inner happiness as well. And I know that one more person has... you know, it's a it's not about me doing it, but it's about sharing the happiness that I feel. And I know that that happiness is shared, as in groups like our group. You know, we share what we take out of this group. We share what we learn from studying Holmes and other writers. And so I like to think of my exercise of walking down the hall as having a major impact on the world. So Holmes also says, if a person can love enough, he will be loved, and there won't be any question about it. If he's entered a state of peace in his own mind, people will feel peaceful around him and want to be there. If he sees that he is the one with a great human race, he will have more friends than he can attend to. And at the same time, if we're irritable, if we're antagonistic, we're going to attract the same, just like our energetic body odor. So if we open our heart and greet strangers with an embrace, they will feel loved. And this is our work. It's the work of each one of us. And we can only bring it about ourselves because we all have some uniqueness that needs to be shared with the world. So, because my talks tend to be kind of short and sweet, I'm going to close with a quote from one of my favorite writers, Neville Goddard. The book is From Your Faith. The book is Your Faith is Your Fortune, and it's from the Neville Goddard collection. If you have a Kindle, you can download that, I think, for free or nominal amount of money. I am the formless awareness of being conceiving, awareness of being, conceiving myself to be man. By my everlasting law of being, I am compelled to be and to express all that I believe myself to be. I am the eternal nothingness containing within my formless self the capacity to be all things. I am that in which all my conceptions of myself live and move and have their being, and apart from which they are not. I dwell within every conception of myself. From this withinness, I ever seek to transcend all conceptions of myself. By the very law of my being, I transcend my conceptions of myself, as only I believe myself to be that which does transcend. I am the law of being, and beside me, there is no law. I am that I am. And so it is.
And so it is.
Wow.
So remember, put on that deodorant.